It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Denise Ross, editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. And Denise, welcome to Dakota Midday.
It's good to be here, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court is set to rule on whether people can get subsidies under the Affordable Care Act in states that didn't set up their own insurance exchanges, like South Dakota. U.S. Senator John Thune sent out a tweet earlier this week that said 6 million people risk losing their health care subsidies, yet the president continues to deny that Obamacare is bad for the American people. That tweet got a lot of criticism nationwide, many simply saying that it was confusing. And Denise, does the senator's tweet make any sense to you?
Well, it was irony at its best. I mean, he's criticizing his party, the Republicans, and the move that he supports is trying to remove the provision of the law, I have it overruled by the Supreme Court, that gives these 6 million people the subsidies they need to afford their health care under this law. And then he wants to criticize the president because these same 6 million people stand to lose their coverage. I mean, it's certainly confusing, and I don't know if the person who wrote that, and it certainly wasn't Senator Thune, it was someone from his communication staff, almost certainly, if that person was confused or if they just thought that these little nuances would be lost on the general public and they could put this kind of criticism out as just sort of a political hack job. But it was a gaffe. I mean, there's no question about that, and I don't know if the senator himself will address it. I'd be very interested to see how he phrases any statements he makes about this.
Roger Whittle, what was your interpretation of the senator's tweet?
Well, to me it made perfect sense because it seems today Washington politicians, they're main job is to criticize the other party, and that's what he set out to do. And you know, if the facts don't really stand behind it, that seems to be okay these days.
If it was written by a staff member, Roger, do you think that staff member is in a little bit of hot water?
Well, from what I've read, we don't know yet if he wrote it or if a staff member wrote it. He does do quite a few of his own tweets, but there hasn't really been much coming from the Thune camp over this. However, on social media, it's just going crazy. I hope the senator has a thick skin because millions of people now know who he is from reading Facebook.
Is that, Roger, a good or bad thing? I mean, is this backlash going to hurt him?
Well, it's not going to hurt him in South Dakota. I can't imagine what John Thune would have to do to get South Dakotans not to vote for him again. And again, this, you know, it's one of these social media things that tomorrow there'll be something new and everybody will have forgotten about this. So, no, I don't see any backlash over this from him.
Well, Denise, what do you think this does, if anything, for Senator Thune's reputation nationwide?
Well, I was going to say it probably leaves him with some egg on his face on Capitol Hill. And his staff, I know we don't officially know who wrote this, but I will be the most surprised person in South Dakota if it turns out that the senator himself wrote that. Nonetheless, it reflects on him, the process that might or might not exist to filter and review and edit these social media posts as they go out. I mean, on this brave new world that we're in, an instantaneous world, there may not be much editing or review that goes on. With that, and it's the summertime, it could have, I mean, I'm purely speculating, but we don't know what the interns are doing. It could have been an intern, I mean, it could have been anybody who wrote this tweet, and we don't know what level of review they had. So this is probably a lesson for everybody in Congress and how you run your social media. And I agree with Roger. In South Dakota, this is where Obamacare is pretty unpopular with most of the electorate. It's probably not going to register. People probably even tend to agree with Senator Thune, as twisted as it is. But on Capitol Hill, and where we're in the middle of the 2016 presidential kickoff season has kicked off already, and Senator Thune is mentioned amongst possible vice presidential candidates. I don't know how that would all factor in, but that's in the mix, and that's what goes on Capitol Hill. So we'll have to see how this all plays out.
The South Dakota High School Activities Association is considering revisions to its policy on transgender student participation in sports. This comes after attempts during the legislature to void the policy. Roger Whittle, what sort of changes do you think are under discussion here? What is it that the legislators want to see? There's some legislators who are critical of that policy.
Well, the policy says that students should have the opportunity to participate in activities based on their gender identity. In other words, how they see themselves, how they live their life, rather than what their gender is listed on their student records. It seems pretty radical for some in the South Dakota legislature, and they just, I don't think they have a specific policy in mind. They were just wanting to know why the Activity Association was the body to make this, pretty major policy, and they wanted something to do with it, and there are other entities like the School Board Association thinks that they should have some say in what this policy should be. So I just heard today, just minutes ago, that they put off a decision until August on this. They were meeting in Pier today, I believe, to talk about it. So no decision is going to come until the end of the summer.
So does this suggest that, how difficult it is, Roger, to put together a policy on transgender participation in sports?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a question of the difficulty of coming up with a policy. I think in this case it's more of a whose role is it to do that? So, whether it should be the legislature or the individual schools maybe or a statewide organization. I'm not sure if it's the policy itself that's being criticized. It's the way that it was implemented.
Denise Ross, do you have any thoughts on the controversy and the discussion over coming up with a policy on this issue?
Well, I think it's a tough one. I mean, I think you can understand, especially, parents of girls and coaches of girls' teams, where you would have someone who was born a male and is wanting to live their life as a female, but they're born with all the athletic advantages of a male, stronger, faster, whatnot, bigger, how that would affect the fairness of the game. And I think it's a really legitimate debate to have. And my personal opinion has always been that the High School Activities Association seems like the perfect group to make the decision. I haven't studied it closely, so there may be dynamics that would alter that. But I think it's a tough call because you want to be fair to the individual people, and it's a big topic, obviously, now in our whole society nationwide. You also want to be fair to the other athletic competitors. So I think it's tough, and I've covered the legislature. I've been there, day in and day out. I don't know if that body has the tools and the understanding of all the different dynamics of these high school sports to make that decision, but they certainly have the authority to step in, and that's what they've done. So I think if they don't hear from their constituents, they'll probably continue to try and take a hold of this issue.
The governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force on Teachers and Students Exploring Teacher Pay and Education Funding is holding public meetings this month. Last week there was a forum held in Rapid City. And Denise, I don't know if you were there. I'm wondering if you've heard about what came out of that forum. What are some of the things that are under discussion?
I wanted to be there, but I was at a Little League game. I've got two little boys who are, one just got out of kindergarten, one's about ready to go into kindergarten. And I was at a Little League game with talking to some other moms who also wanted to be at that task force meeting. It was the day after the vote on the opt-out here in Rapid City that lost, and there were parents who were upset about it, so that there was quite a bit of discussion going on at the Little League game. So that's what I can tell you about specifically. I only know what happened at the Blue Ribbon Task Force based on media reports, one of them being South Dakota Public Radio. Sounds like some thoughtful legislators who really want to do a good job. We've all seen this movie before. The people who are the most passionate in the legislature about a certain issue work their tails off on one of these summer study committees or special task forces, put together some really good information, make some really great recommendations, and what happens when the legislature convenes again in January? It gets lost in the shuffle. There probably have been some that have been implemented or ideas that have come to fruition. I can't think of any off the top of my head. I sure hope this one is different. I think the state is ready for change. That's my sense in the way we fund our public education. So I wish this task force certainly all the best luck in getting their work done and getting traction in January.
Roger Whittle, what do you think will happen with the task force's recommendation? Do you think these will move forward in the legislature? I suppose we don't know what those recommendations are yet, so it's kind of hard to say.
We don't, and I'm sure whatever they come up with will move through the legislature and not come out the other side what it was coming in, much like the transportation funding from last session. We in Watertown will have our Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting on the 22nd of June, and I'm looking forward to attending that because it's an interesting situation. And I know Denise will probably talk about the study the South Dakota Dashboard came out with today that I found really interesting.
And Roger is wondering, you know, if you know, looking at this, education, is there any state that doesn't have a problem dealing with education funding? This isn't something necessarily unique to South Dakota.
Well, it's really not, but not every state is dead last in teacher pay either. So, you know, we do have a problem, and our problem is unique in that regard. But yes, coming up with funding for anything these days is not easy, but other states seem to be doing a better job of it than we are.
Well, Denise, as Roger just mentioned, South Dakota Dashboard has this new analysis of spending on education in South Dakota. What did you find?
Well, and this is hot off the press. I mean, I just hit send about an hour ago to send out some of this information and put it post up on Facebook. So this is data from the U.S. Census. It's from 2013 dollars, but I don't think the picture changes much, you know, from year to year. And there's a wealth of information. This is the first part in a series that we're doing. We looked just at the state's piece of funding versus local versus federal, and then how we compare to our neighboring states for that piece of it and per pupil overall spending. So probably no surprise to very many people, South Dakota's last on total per pupil spending, that state, local, and federal among all of our neighbors, and by quite a ways, and almost half of what Wyoming is spending is what we're spending here in South Dakota. The more surprising thing to me was that local taxpayers are paying for 54% of the K-12 bill in South Dakota. The state of South Dakota is paying for 31%. And this wasn't included in the release, but there was a data point in there that of that overall piece, only 26% of that comes from the general state aid formula. The rest of it comes from various pieces and parts that I can't remember exactly what other funding the state kicks in. So we'll be digging into that and getting that. But that's a pretty small percentage when you think about the idea, as I recall, when Bill Jankel was governor and they overhauled the state education spending formula, was supposed to be half and half, that the state spending would be on par with the local spending and they'd try to keep the property taxes down. So if that was the idea and the intent of the school funding formula, we've gone way off the rails. We're way off half-half right now.
How do these rankings compare with the numbers that are cited during the debates over education funding in South Dakota?
Well, I've heard at the Cracker Barrel here in Rapid City, we had the chairman of the House Education Committee, Jacqueline Fly, and she liked to state that overall for per pupil spending, we are not last. We're 36th or somewhere in the middle, but that's due because of all the local effort that's being put in. If you look at the state contribution, we are 49th. But if you look at the local, how much local money we're putting in, we're 18th. So there's a big disparity there, and if the state would meet the local where we are locally, we would be caught up with our neighbors. So I don't think the problem is at the local level. And these numbers are different for every district, and some districts have opted out of the property tax cap, as we know. Some haven't. But as a state, on aggregate, that's where we're at.
The legislature's Joint Committee on Appropriations is meeting in Sioux Falls to discuss how to spend the additional $1 million that was appropriated by the legislature for use by the four public tech schools in Watertown, Mitchell, Rapid City, and Sioux Falls. We were talking about public school K-12 funding. It almost sounds, Roger Whittle, like this is something of a golden age for tech schools in South Dakota. Does it seem that way to you?
It really does. I mean, especially here at Lake Area, they've been getting a lot of national publicity the last few years. And it's interesting, this $1 million that they're in Sioux Falls today trying to split up, this $1 million was given by the legislature, after the Build Dakota Scholarship Program was introduced. That's where the state and Denny Sanford got together and gave a bunch of money to offer scholarships to tech schools. The legislature thought it would be a good idea to take some extra money and give it to these schools to build up some of these programs that are going to be attracting more students now. And they're in Sioux Falls, the four presidents trying to decide how to split up that $1 million, including 25% to each school, or giving it to the schools based on their funding formula through the state. And they're meeting this afternoon to decide that.
Well, finally, the editor who wrote the famous New York Post headline, "Headless Body in Topless Bar," has died. Although memorable, was Denise, this a good headline journalistically, especially given the gruesome, violent crime?
Well, my analysis is that it is, based on this criteria that I got from Bob Schieffer, who just retired from Face Nation on CBS recently, but I admire him very much. His mantra is, tell what happened, okay? We're not out there to judge what happened necessarily, and there's certainly lots of different ways to tell what happened, but if you want something that tells what happened, I'd say that headline definitely fits the bill. You read those four words or five words, and you know what the outline, broad strokes of what happened, and you probably want to read more, and that's another function of a headline, is to draw readers into the story. You may not like that there was a gruesome crime, but the journalist didn't make the gruesome crime happen. They're just telling the rest of the community about the gruesome crime.
Roger Whittle, for you, does that seem like sort of a headline that you'd put in the Watertown Public Opinion?
I was just going to add to what Denise said. Yes, everything she said is correct, but you also have to a little bit keep in mind your audience. And the audience for the New York Post, I don't think, would be nearly as shocked and disturbed by this headline as, say, the Watertown Public Opinion or the Clark County newspapers. So, good headline, yes, but I probably would not have run it in the public opinion. But we don't have a topless bar anyway. It wouldn't have worked.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Roger, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you.
And Denise, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you, Carl.